I think that we take our cues from the world of improvisation. Follow your feet, which in improv just means take the next little step. Trust yourself enough to step out, get off of the back line, which is where you see the improvisers are standing off to the side, waiting to insert themselves into the conversation. Follow your feet and get off the back line. Just start something. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be for anyone but yourself. And it has to be of your choosing. For you.
Welcome to Reinvention Rebels. Stories of brave and unapologetic women, 50 to 90 years young, who have boldly reimagined life on their own terms to find new purpose and possibilities. I'm your host, Wendy Battles. Ready for a dose of inspiration? Let's get to it. Hello, 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 Reinvention Rebels. Welcome to another episode of the Reinvention Rebels podcast. I am so excited that you have joined me today. You know, I always bring it with some amazing guests, and today is no exception. In a couple moments, I will introduce you to my amazing guest. But first, let's talk for just a moment, and I have to ask you this really important question. Did you have a chance to listen to the last episode, one of my all-time favorites, with my sweet mama, Elaine Battles? 89-year young Elaine Battles, the amazing, almost 90, active and engaged Elaine Battles. It was a treat. It was pure joy. It was so much fun to be in conversation with my mom about her reinvention journey, what she's experienced, her challenges, how she's overcome them, and the power of role models, the strong, fierce women within our family that helped pave the way for many of her reinventions. If you haven't had a chance to listen, I encourage you to take 45 minutes to lean in and listen to this episode. So much inspiration. She really is a joy and full of so many great ideas at 89. So I've linked to it in the show notes. You can easily find it. I hope you'll check it out and let me know what you think. Today, I'm very excited to introduce you to someone who is so cool, someone I've known for many, many years, and she is an amazing reinvention rebel. She has reinvented herself in many different ways during many different decades of her life, including her most recent one. So sit back, relax, and let me introduce you to my guest today, Ellen Feldman Ornato. At 61, Ellen Feldman Ornato has been around the reinvention block many times. She's not afraid of self-exploration, starting fresh, having multiple do-overs, and reinventing herself in ways that align with her life and values. She's been a city planner, an economic development official, and a marketing director in a large retail chain. She is an entrepreneur at heart and also owned a learning company and a marketing and public relations firm. I had the pleasure of meeting the fabulous Ellen Ornato when we were both diversity trainers for the Anti-Defamation League many decades ago. While her earlier reinventions generated learning and new experiences, they were ultimately preparing her for the most recent and exciting reinvention as the co-owner of the Boulder Company with her best friend, Jenny. Can you imagine reinventing yourself, doing something that you love and find fun, but also brings out fun and silliness in your clients? Ellen and Jenny help individuals and teams make positive changes in their communication and behaviors through fully experiential improvisation-based learning. Yep, improv. Second city shenanigans in the workplace that bring out our humanity and connection to one another in bold, confident ways, and the idea that we can always continue to grow. You will love our conversation about reinvention, developing our bold muscles, and stepping into the light to share our immense gifts with the world. Ellen reminds us that possibility lives within each of us, no matter our age, that we all have inner greatness. We just have to build the courage and confidence to uncover it. Ellen Ornato, welcome to the Reinvention Rebels guest chair.
Oh my goodness, I am so excited. I am so excited to talk with you. I really appreciate your having me on. And Wendy, when you were describing that, I was like, oh my goodness, that was a significantly long time ago that you and I met as trainers at the ADL.
Forever ago. It seems like a lifetime ago, considering all the other things we both have done since then.
Yep. Yeah, we're both emeritus status now. That says something.
It's that long ago, right? We've moved on to other cool things.
You know, yes, we have.
Stuff in the world. But it's so fun when I get to interview people that I know and adore and enjoy being around and have this history with. So, you know, I'm all excited about our conversation today. And I have so many questions for you. I thought I might start sort of at the beginning, so to speak, because I know that as we age, many women are doing less as they age, perhaps less involved, less active for whatever reason. But you seem like you are doing more at 61, almost 62. You have a willingness, in my mind, to go there when it comes to self-reflection and growth. I'm curious, what has fueled your thirst to reinvent yourself?
I always feel like there's something more that I want to try, something more that I want to be. And it doesn't really come from a place of not good enough. It comes from a place of curiosity and passion and the belief that I'm never too old to learn, never too old to grow. You know, as somebody told me the other day, they use this thing like when you're in your 60s, it's your go-go years. And when you're in your 70s, it's your go-slow years. And when it's in your 80s, it's your no-go years. You know, kind of talking about the limitations that can evolve over time because of physical illness or whatever. I want to be in my go-go years when I'm in my 80s. Like, I think that should be the base. 90s, I can go slow. So, you know, and I've always just sort of followed my curiosity, which is why my career path is more like a ride on a roller coaster at Six Flags than it is an actual path. I mean, it's my path and it's worked well, but it's that I always have, like right now, if we sat down and you said, what do you want to do next? I have five different tangents that I could go in that are distinct things that I'd like to do and try besides being, you know, the co-founder of Boulder Company.
Right. I love that. I love that you have such curiosity. And it's really interesting that you said curiosity and passion.
Yeah.
Because I think those are really key ingredients to having a life that we love, where we feel really alive, that kind of feeling that you want to have, not just in your 60s as you are now, but in your 80s, still this kind of vibrancy. And curiosity is such a common thread among the Reinvention Rebels that I interview, including my mom, who I just interviewed, and she said the same thing, that she's always been curious. And that's how at 89, she's involved in all kinds of things and doing all kinds of things and out being productive in the world in you know, in her own way. So I think that that is something that really resonates with me. And I think for people that are, you know, women, midlife women, older women that are trying to kind of find themselves or sort of figure out what's next, I always feel like that's a really good place to start some self-inquiry.
I agree. One of the best pieces of advice that I got early on in my career, I did a couple of dips into multi-level marketing. So in addition to always having a full-time job, and sometimes even a full-time job and kids, I was always looking at the next great opportunity, you know, so Amway twice, you know, all these different multi-level marketing businesses. But one of the times that I was at one of these big conventions, somebody said from the stage that 95% of success in life is just showing up. So, you know, I tend to overschedule my life with things to show up for. I can't say I make it 100% of the time, but it's always running in the back of my mind that I should just go, because if I go, something will happen. I'll meet somebody. I'll learn something. At the very least, I will get out of my soft pants and into pants with a waistband and leave my house. Right.
Oh my
God. That
was
even before COVID. And you know, it's just that I love to be out with people. I get energy from people.
I swear we're so similar, Ellen. We're so similar in that note. Because, and who drew me into Silpada but you?
Oh, that's right. That's
remember?
Yes, I do.
Oh my gosh. Like
I'm not wearing any Silpada today, but I could be on any given day.
But we've been connected in like multiple ways over
these
years.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
I really love it. So I know that you've reinvented yourself many times over many decades, often in very different ways. Mm-hmm. What's different about this most recent reinvention? Are you thinking, I'll have some of what she's having? Reinvention Ripples are amazing, as you can hear from our discussion. They've put themselves first, decided their dreams matter, and are taking action. They have unleashed their inner rebel and are living on purpose in midlife. Are you ready to start putting yourself first and embark on your midlife dreams, focused on what you want, not others' ideas of what you should do? Come check out my new audio course, Midlife Reinvention from the Inside Out, 8 Essentials to Greenlight Your Life. I share my roadmap to get you started on your reinvention journey with the key components you need to navigate detours and get on the road to smooth reinvention sailing. Sis, it is time to give yourself the green light to shine in midlife and crush those dreams of yours with joy and purpose. Join today and let's reinvent and get inspired together. Details are in the show notes.
Well, I've been self-employed since 1997. Right. So in 1997, I got a call from my boss while I was sitting on the couch nursing my daughter. She was 4 weeks old. And he told me that my job had been eliminated. And it created a moment in time where I had to make a choice. And fortunately, my husband and I had enough resources. And he said, why don't you try starting your own business? So from 1997 until late 2014, I did my own thing. So I was a consultant. I worked for other businesses. Sometimes it was in marketing and PR. Sometimes it was picking up that thread of diversity training and adding other tools to my training tool belt, where I was going in and either designing training and delivering it or working as a per diem trainer for other organizations. And then I started doing improv with Jenny, my business partner, who is also a very close friend who I met at an Amway meeting. We like to say we ditched the business and kept each other. She called me and said, I'm going to go do this improv class. It's called physical improv. I'm like, I've never done improv and I don't know what physical improv is, but if you're suggesting we go, let's do it. So we went to, it was CT Improv in Hartford. I still remember the class. They had us pretend we were file cabinets and gears in a clock. Like, and we had to like create a machine with each other. And I was like, this is more fun than I've had in a very long time. We laughed the whole time. And I said, okay. So that just lit up a whole part of me and my brain that has clearly been, because I have a lot of gravitas around certain issues, you know, around DEI and wanting to be the change and make a difference in the world. And this was just pure silly. There was nothing to do in improv but be silly. So she enrolled in an improv class and I just followed along and then started taking class after class after class after class. And what started to evolve for me was an awareness that I was building skills inside of learning improvisation that translated directly to the work that I was doing in training. My listening got better. I was in the moment with people. I was additive in my conversations with people instead of sort of hijacking the conversation from others. And I was already doing enough training that I realized that it could really embellish the work that I was doing and create a new way for me to integrate into training so that people could interact with each other in a much more meaningful way. And brain science tells us that when we laugh, we learn more, right? When we light up our brains with laughter and connection and love, our body just floods with all the good stuff. And we have more access to confidence and laughter and connection. So I started doing the improv. I noticed that, you know, there were days when it wasn't so great. And I'd go home gripping the steering wheel going, why the hell am I doing this? God, it was terrible, you know, but mostly it was fun. And then we entered into an improv festival in Hartford, and then we had an improv group. And Jenny called me one day and said, you know, there's this thing called the Applied Improvisation Network. I said, cool. What's that? She said, it's people who are doing what we've been doing, right? Adding and using exercises from improv and adding them into the work that they're doing. She said, they're having a conference in Austin, Texas. Want to go? Hell yeah. A, Austin, and B, improv. So we went to this conference and found our tribe. Cool, fun, engaging, crazy, connective, generous. I was like, wow, these people are home. Immediately, these people, these improvisational people, these people who say yes and figure things out, they were home. They were the community that I'd been looking for, she'd been looking for. And we were literally sitting on a curb at a food truck eating burritos when we looked at each other and said, why don't we figure out how to do something together? So in answer to your question that you asked a very long time ago, the way that this current iteration is different is that I'm engaged in something that just always lights me up with a close, dear friend with whom I've grown into a much better business person. And we are hiring and we are doing work internationally and we're doing, you know, we're speaking on bigger stages all the time. And, you know, my goal all along was to become some level of thought leader, but in running in the back of my mind, I was always about like, in what?
Yeah.
I'd love to be a thought leader, but what my, the thoughts I think, you know, I don't know. Right. So, but just today I was on a panel for Bowling Green State University's doctoral program in organizational development, talking about applied improvisation as a tool for collaborative change. So I guess I got to thought leader as a result of getting really into this modality of OD, of organizational development and training.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I love that. And one of the things that really strikes me is this idea that sometimes there's something we want. Like you said, I want to be a thought leader. I don't know how. Because sometimes we don't know the how. Like we have this dream or we have this goal, but we don't know the how of it happening. And I think part of it is taking action. Right. And sometimes those things become revealed to us, as is in your case. And I also think that when we're doing something that we love, as you talked about, that you're so passionate about, that lights you up, that you get to do this with someone who you really have this deep connection with, that things can unfold in such interesting ways and we can find our way. We don't always know our way at the beginning. And I think about that a lot with reinvention, that sometimes, you know, we all want to know the answers. We want to just have more certainty. We want to just be like, I want to do X, Y, and Z, and it's going to happen. And life, of course, is so not like that. It's so circuitous, right? And all the different paths. But I think it's so fascinating that you did put out into the world what you wanted to do. You didn't really know how it was going to show up. It showed up in this really amazing way. And because you were so open to this, I see the manifestation of this now.
Oh, definitely. And very assertive business development, right? In some regards. So, you know, part of what I've gotten good at doing, because I handle a lot of the business development, is looking at conferences that are coming up and looking at their agendas. And it's like, panel after keynote after panel after keynote after and I've started to say, what industries do we want to work in? Where, what stages do we want to be on? And our offer always to these organizations is we bring an element of interactivity to your organization and your event that elevates the level of fun, engagement, connection, networking, and they learn a skill while they're doing it. And they're always like, okay. So now we do work nationally with the women in manufacturing. And having been associated with them now for 3 years, almost all of our clients are manufacturers, which is an ideal fit for a lot of reasons with our company. But it's also a place where women are starting to grow in terms of presence. And it's not an environment that has been historically friendly to women. Right. Women have had to adapt in a man's world, and now things are really shifting. And so we're part of that's, you know, that be the change thing. You know, what we see is a whole generation of leaders moving off towards golf courses and wherever they're retiring to. And they're leaving the next level of leadership within these organizations was trained by them. So if they had a very militaristic do as I say, not as I do kind of way of organizing work and world. These folks need to be reconditioned, if you will. They don't all need it, but a lot of them need to, because their sights were always set on how do I please the people who are leaving? And now they're looking at the generations that are coming into the workplace going, oh, the way we were taught to lead is so ill-fitted to what this group of incoming people needs. And so we're like, yes, they want to engage with you. They want to bring their ideas to you. They want to be nurtured. They want to learn, right? It's not that they need a trophy. It's that they want to contribute and be acknowledged for it. Like, let's look at the gifts of the millennial generation who said, no, I'm not working 80 hours a week. Your job is just not that valuable to me, which completely reorganized how businesses need to think about their profit centers, right? So anyway, so that's fascinating to me.
Is it really is
where evolution is happening in business and how we can insert the way that we develop people in a way that moves organizations forward.
It's fascinating. The work that you're doing, the opportunities that it's afforded, and how one thing, you know, I think too, because so much of this in reinventing ourselves is getting started and then being consistent, whatever that thing is. Doesn't matter what it is, what your dream is, what your goal is, you just have to keep at it. And this just reminds me, listening to you talk about this, listening to how you have consistently worked with fun and connection to build this business. And you see now how it is growing, which can be applied to anything we want to do in our lives, whether it's a business or it's something that we, a skill we want to learn or a hobby we want to take up, right? There's that period where you got to kind of figure it out and you have to believe you can do it. So it does take some of those kinds of things. Like often I think of patience and trust, but also ease. Like it doesn't have to be so hard.
Right.
But that's such a great, you're such a great testament to this. So I really love that. I know that over your many reinventions, Ellen, over many different years of doing many different things, you have learned a lot of different lessons. I'm curious about what has been an impactful lesson you've learned in your most recent reinvention, this current one with the Boulder Company, that has surprised you.
So one of the areas of content that we teach is the five behaviors of cohesive teams. And there are five layers within the construct, the first being trust, right? So Jenny and I have, I would say, pretty bulletproof trust of each other, right? Which started over beers at my house in Vermont, where we both like went to our corners and wrote down all the things we were afraid of about starting our business together. And then we came, because we had already gone through, we had spent 2 days like, what are your assets? What are my assets? Who's our ideal client? Like all the blah, blah, blah business planning stuff. And then we're like, well, we don't want to blow this ship apart. So what are the things we're afraid of? And the number one thing was that we would lose our friendship with each other. That the house can burn down, but we are each other's people. And so that's tantamount to everything else. So we have trust. Where we both needed to grow, and I continue to need to grow, is in effectively managing conflict, mastering conflict. I'm one of the founding members of Conflict Avoidance Anonymous. I'm
a member too.
Yeah, I'd rather pass than get in the argument. But the thing is that just perpetuates resentment. Yes. And bad practices. So we've both gotten really much better at just saying what needs to be said. And I've said to Jenny, I'm like, I'm a big girl. So you can say what you need to say to me. I can't promise I'm going to like it. I can't promise I'm not going to cry, but I can promise that I will listen and I won't be mad at you for saying what you need to say. Right. So that's been a huge learning for me because, you know, we get into our familial relationships and our relationships with our significant others. There's conflicts we take on. There's conflicts we don't take on. But when you're in business together and it's about money or it's about getting stuff done or it's about like how much we're paying people or any of the millions of other things that we have to talk about that require candor, we have to be willing to engage in conflict. So that has been my number one. My number two is we have gotten much better at holding each other to the commitments we make. We've gotten more explicit about the commitments we're making, and we've gotten better at holding each other accountable for the commitments we make. And we still screw up as recently as last week. So we are always evolving, right? We're trying to live the work we're teaching.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's like going into a diversity session and not having done the work yourself. And trying to tell other people what they need to do. You know, for me, that's such an integrity check. And in fact, during Black Lives Matter, I sat back. I actually called Michelle, a mutual friend of ours, and said, how do you find your voice in this? I feel like I don't have standing to say anything in all of what's going on right now. I feel like I have to go back to school and learn more and read more. She said, well, you do. And also, given your history and passion for this, why wouldn't you speak? Why wouldn't you say? Like you need to, that moment of courage of saying, I am enough in this conversation to guide the conversation. I don't have to know everything to be part of it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I need to show up with empathy, integrity, to be willing to take hard questions, to be willing to look inside. So the extent to which I'm vulnerable and say, there's a lot I don't know. And I don't expect anyone to teach it to me. I need to figure it out, right? I can read and I can listen and I can, you know, what all those things. It's important to me to always be living that thing that we're teaching. And it's really hard sometimes.
It is.
Because I would really rather watch Love at First Sight on Netflix.
I know. Doing that hard work, however that manifests for any of us, whatever those things are, like how you spoke to, well, I've gotten better. I'm surprised because I've gotten better at dealing with conflict and the notion that we are always evolving. We continue to evolve. It doesn't matter how old we are.
Mm-hmm.
We all have experiences that if we're open to them can help us grow and expand and really blossom in new ways. And that's part of what I hear you saying, that it's been this, you know, I think you're an awakened person, but you know, you're continuing down that path of
right.
There's always more possibility for greater awakening for all of us when it comes to our self-development. And I love that because I think that's such a key thing about reinvention, right? If we're open to reinventing ourselves, we're open to looking deeply at ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking about what's possible.
And also giving ourselves a break.
Totally.
You know, Jenny and I just spoke at this big trade show in Atlanta. 2 weeks ago. And the picture that we took in front of, like, there was a full banner of the session we were teaching, and we stood on either side and we had the pictures and we were going to use it for marketing. And I took one look at the picture and my inner critic was like, no way are they using that picture. I look like I am like one big amorphous blob between my hips and my neck. I hate this photo of me. We can't use it. And I like, all of my insecurities about appearance just came blazing out of my fat mouth with my marketing team. And they're just sitting there and smiling at me. And they're like, you really need to be kinder to yourself. This is not a bad photo. And I was like, yes, but right. So I'm always battling my own demons. Mm. And the good news is that I call on them much more quickly. I see them for who they are. Like, I don't say, you know, why am I feeling so angry right now? I just say that picture stinks and I'm going to use it anyway because there's a business imperative here and I don't have another alternative. The alternative would be to not be there at all. And I'm very committed to not deleting myself out of my own life.
Yeah. And I think that that's so key because I think as women, especially, we are so self-critical. We offer ourselves so little grace often.
Yes.
And, you know, we have this whole idea of trying to be perfect, but there's so many lessons to be learned in those imperfections and leaning into it's going to be okay. And, you know, because I think we spend all this time being critical of ourselves and other people don't even see it. First of all, it's incredibly vain that we are like, I look terrible. And people are like, well, I don't see it at all. And you look fine. Moving on. It's not this big deal.
Right. Besides, I'm worried about me, not you. So, how do I look? Right.
Exactly.
Did you do the landmark form as well? Do I remember that about you?
I did. Oh, wasn't that what? A whole nother thing.
Yeah. That was one of the punchlines from Landmark, right? Is that everybody's walking around so self-conscious about what the world is thinking of them. And the truth is, people are thinking about themselves, not you.
Exactly.
All the time. Everybody's thinking about themselves.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting that we can go there.
Yeah.
Hey, Reinvention Rebels. Are you loving this episode with the amazing Ellen Feldman Ornato? It's so good, right? So much wisdom, so much fun. So much possibility as we age, as she so beautifully talks about. If you are loving this inspiration, I want to encourage you to pop over to reinventionrebels.com and sign up for my news and notes. I share all kinds of inspiration delivered to your inbox every 2 weeks. Let's get inspired together. One thing that I love about what you're doing now is that it is incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. Like laughing so hard, you might start crying kind of fun.
Yes, we hope so.
Right? And I know that most of us don't get enough of that. But I also know that as women, we tend to take ourselves very seriously. You know, we don't want to, we talked about already how we tend to be hard on ourselves. We want to get everything right. And so we don't always give ourselves permission to lean into fun. Mm-hmm. So I am curious about how you think midlife and older women can build their fun muscle.
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I think that taking an improv class is a gateway to self-expression. I really do. And we work with lots of people who are very, they have things to say and their voices don't come out of their mouth. They stay quiet inside their heads and they have something to say in the world. And so early on when Jenny and I created our curriculum, we created this program called Connect and Stand Out. And it was all about sort of channeling and being seen doing things, silly things, like passing an invisible ball to each other. Or I say a word, you say a word back. Then we say another word. Then we make up a story at a word at a time. And then we make up a story, a sentence at a time. And I'm very focused on not failing you. So I get out of my head and into the moment. And then I realize that it's okay to be in the moment. It's okay to screw up in the moment. Because, you know, improv, it comes, it goes, it's done. It's like a post-it note. Just, it's done. Yeah. So if you do a bad scene, who cares? You did a bad scene.
So what? Right?
If you say the wrong thing, there's no wrong thing. Just say the thing and the person across from you. See, part of the agreement in improv is if you say something and I process it like, I don't understand why she said that, but I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to make her right. And that's my job is to make you right. So if I say to you, for example, the sky is blue, and you say, huh, I was looking up at the sky and I didn't see anything. Like, that's a block. And so we could stop the whole scene, right? If I say, well, take off your sunglasses, now the scene keeps rolling again. So it's that willingness to like be in the moment, listen to what the person said, go to the next thing, and realize that there's no judgment in where you decide to go. You know, and when you do enough improvisation, you realize there actually are rules. Like, whose line is it anyway? Doesn't happen by magic. There are some real rules in improv that help guide the way that we interact with each other and guide the way that where the scene might go. And there are structures and all this cool stuff. And I've done musical improv, which is crazy hard to be making up a song on the spot with specific, like,
that sounds hard.
You know, it's a sentence with three words, it's a sentence with four words and whatever cadence. And it has to make sense and the audience has to enjoy it. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's and it is so ridiculously fun. Oh my goodness.
I bet. Like,
you can't be self-conscious and be doing that. You have to be in that moment. And I know you do a lot with breathing and with meditation. Yoga, I mean, doing improvisation is kind of like meditation, but laughing. Only because you can't be doing two things at one time. You can breathe.
Yeah.
Or you can be in the scene. The thing is, if you're in a scene and you're in your head, you miss the scene.
Right. So, exactly. So if you're already thinking about like what maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that, instead of just kind of reacting.
Yeah, you can't think ahead. If you think ahead, you thought wrong. Especially we do these circle games all the time where we'll say, okay, so we're going to build a story, a sentence at a time. And you see people disappear into their heads. A, they're going to be seen. B, they have to say something. And C, what they want to say, the right thing. So by the time it gets to them, they haven't been listening to the three people right before them.
Right. And I understand that too, how right? Like we could do that, right? Because sometimes it's like that perfection. I want to get it right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because women, they like that certainty. We want to feel like we're doing a good job.
Yep.
But it sounds to me like one of the things I hear you saying is that if you're willing to lean in and be present,
mm-hmm.
one, it can be incredibly enjoyable, but also it sounds very freeing.
Yes. It's freeing. And it's also, you know, when you talk about brain health and the things that keep us sharp, it's like a sharpening blade for your brain because you have to be in the moment and saying something, you know, you have to be present to the scene. And when you get better at it, you can take on accents and make yourself sound like you come from somewhere else. And your whole character can be embodied with the way that you move and the way that you talk. And like, you could just make stuff up. And when you do that, if you have good scene partners, they then drop into whatever ridiculous accent you're trying to make. And then you have a whole scene about something that, right?
Right.
Because there's an agreement that we're here to make each other look good. Yeah. Imagine if that happened in corporate America every day, that you would right. show up at work with the agreement that my job is to learn as much about you as possible so that I can elevate you and make you look good.
Yeah. I mean, what a concept that would be.
Yeah.
And I just think there's so much possibility in this if we're, especially thinking about just midlife women that are reinventing themselves,
yes.
just dipping their toe in to the creativity
yes.
of this, even if you aren't going to have a career in improv, which most people aren't, it's still to me a gateway
yes.
to more creativity, which could mm-hmm. fuel the ideas that might lead to your reinvention in midlife or older at whatever age, at 75, 90, it doesn't even matter.
Yes. Yep.
And I love that.
Well, and one of the places where we had a toehold early in our business was with authors and specifically women authors, because they had taken all this time and energy to write a book. And the process of writing a book is a very internal, private thing. And they, you know, they finally get it done and they launch the book. And then they realize with horror that the next step is to go out and do speaking engagements so that people will actually buy their books. And it's a completely opposite set of skills that was required to do the book. So we worked with a lot of authors over time and people who had to deliver their dissertations so that they could get more comfortable with being seen and heard. And who doesn't want to hear mature women's voices right now? We have all the goods.
Oh, we do. We do.
Right?
Totally and completely.
And we really don't give a crap what other people think.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So, right? Just look at my Facebook page. You'll recognize that right away. So that's an interesting thing in a walk of life where you're seen as the CEO of a company or a co-CEO to then say, well, I have political opinions too. So how do we separate those is a whole other conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm big mouth when it comes to politics, for sure.
I like that you like that you're being your authentic self, mm-hmm. because I think at the end of the day, no matter how old we are, no matter who we are, I think that when we can find that voice, that authentic mm-hmm. voice, whatever that is for mm-hmm. any of us, that's when we can live full out. That's when we can feel like we're living on purpose. That's when we can feel like we can show up mm-hmm. and just naturally shine our light in the world, in a room, or wherever it is, with complete joy. And to me, nothing is better than that. Mm-hmm. And as we age, just, you know, seeing women step into that, as you're suggesting, and finding their bold voice. And, you know, a bold voice can show up in any way. It can be, right? It doesn't mean that you're like the loudest person in the room. It's right? Being who you are. And I think that is like the best feeling that I've had, you know, in my 50s, is finding that voice, which I feel like took me forever to find. But like, once you find that thing that makes you shine, mm-hmm. it reminds me that anything is possible.
Definitely. 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 The other thing that I would suggest is, if folks aren't comfortable with improv, consider storytelling.
Oh, yes.
Everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah.
Everybody has multiple stories to tell. And, on a lark, I invited a couple friends and we went to something in downtown Hartford. It was like the Hartford Storytelling Championship or something like that. And basically you just put your name in a hat. And I had one story in mind and I hadn't practiced it really. and then I had, you know, a couple cocktails because it was a Hartford Flavor Company. And then they pulled my name out of the hat. Oops. And I got bitten by the bug. Yeah. I love telling stories from stage. I love it, love it, love it. And I have a background in public speaking, but there are lots of people who teach storytelling. My friend Terry Wolfish Cole teaches at CT in Hartford. And, you know, Denise Page is now doing her own storytelling thing. And the Clinton Arts Council is doing storytelling. My friend Brown is involved in that, right? So there are a lot of ways that you can get involved in storytelling in a low stakes environment to learn about how to construct a story and to get some notes and feedback on doing it. And I have to tell you, it is a gas. It is so much fun. Talk about like biting your nails and then feeling like you just, you know, it was so delicious. It's wonderful.
I love how you describe it that way, like delicious. And I know just what you mean, because I am enamored with people's stories. I'm fascinated by people's stories in their lives and what they've experienced and how they got to be where they are today and the things that helped, you know, form them. I mean, that's just so juicy, to your point about being delicious, as someone who loves to listen to stories. And I've never gotten up and, you know, told stories in that way, but I'm like, oh, I think I'd like that.
I think you would. I think you'd be awesome too. You know, everyone's awesome once they get the hang of it.
Yes.
And the thing is that there are lots of opportunities to practice that are, as I said, low stakes environments. I'm not suggesting that you go to the Hartford Flavor Company and when they're doing this thing and drop your name in the hat unless you're ready and don't have two cocktails. But, right. But there's so much good stuff. Matthew Dix is also, we have a treasure here in Connecticut. This guy, Matthew Dix, is now teaching storytelling all over the world. And he's right here in Connecticut. He lives in, I think, Newington, and he's written several books on storytelling. And, you know, he started telling stories on a lark and now he's won the Moth like 35 times. And he's amazing. But I guess I don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but there are a lot of resources if people want to start telling stories. Write them down. Start thinking. And that's a whole other conversation.
Well, I think those are both great ideas, though. The whole idea of, you know, how can we kind of spark our reinvention for ourselves? It could be through improv. It could be getting into your body. It could be, you know, just kind of connecting that way. It could be this, right, this idea of telling your story.
Yeah.
I think those are both really compelling ways to kind of sometimes get outside of ourselves.
Right.
In this environment that is perhaps a little uncomfortable and foreign, but that if we can, again, I feel like so much of it goes back to if we are open to possibilities.
Most and definitely.
Don't have to already know, well, it's going to mean this, or I want it to mean this, or it has to be this outcome. If we're not so tied to the outcome, but we're open to the how.
Yes.
If we have our why and we're open to the how, it just lends itself to so many more possibilities than often our narrowly prescribed path.
Right. And the practice, the practice of practicing gets us to a level of ease with things after a time that at first seemed really scary, you know?
Yeah.
So if we don't start, we never get better at it. And if we start and we practice consistently, we will always get better at it. And there's a lot of joy that comes from getting better enough at something to say, hey, I did this. This is my doodle that I did while I was, you know, sometimes I post doodles on Instagram because they're gorgeous. I'm actually very good at it. It's something that during COVID, I started during all of those endless Zoom meetings, doing really elaborate doodles and then adding color to them.
Wow.
And they're very pretty. And I enjoy them so much. Right. And it's for me. It's not like I'm putting them in an art show or sending them away as gifts or they're for me. Exactly. Right. It doesn't have to be for the world. You don't have to perform, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that, you know, you just speak to the possibilities that exist for any of us. And I think it also says that, you know, we can do this in big or small ways. And because I think that a lot of times we think we have to have it figured out. But I believe that, you know, this self-discovery that we're talking about, which is sort of the key to reinventing ourselves, is really an ongoing process. And I heard you mention the words like, I have evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, we all have.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me the other day, you've been married to the same man for 32 years. I said, oh no. Oh no. If he were the same as he was 32 years ago, we wouldn't be married. Right? I'm not the same. He's not the same. We've evolved together.
Yeah.
You know, we're very different people than when we met and, you know, we've had kids and we, you know, it's an evolution over time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How do you think you've learned to do with more ease? Because it sounds like you've learned so much in all these things that you've done over the years. So how do you embrace the journey of self-discovery and the challenges with more ease?
The challenge with more ease is a big one for me. Huge. I actually have an executive coach, Wendy Parati. I don't know if you know her
I know. I love Wendy.
I love Wendy too. And, she's helping me develop Ellen 4.0, which is somebody who's not wrung out, strung out, stressed out, overwhelmed, you know, because for all the bravado that you're hearing in my voice and my talk about my journey, there are times when I just put way, way, way too much on my plate. Like one trip to the buffet is all I'm committed to doing, but damn it, I'm going to put everything on my plate. And then the stuff starts falling off and I'm like, I don't know which one to catch first. And I get really lost in the overwhelm. And she's helped me to start to see, like, I am actually making great strides at making choices and being more assertive and saying what I need to say and having less emotional attachment to outcomes. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I'm finally becoming a grown up, you know, in spite of all the different career moves and all the different choices and the kids I've raised, it feels like I'm giving birth to who I'm going to be for this next chapter.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. It feels like you're stepping into your best self.
I am. And part of my best self needs to learn how to say no.
Yeah. Me too.
Right.
Yeah. I
want to do it all.
I know you and I are so alike. When I hear you say this, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I know that feeling of the overwhelm, and then the things are, you know, and I'm doing a better job of saying no myself, mm-hmm. which is empowering, because so much of this is about how do we empower ourselves?
Yes.
And, you know, be able to not have to be the yes people that maybe I was in the past, yeah. where I would say yes, 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 because I felt bad or I didn't want to disappoint people. Now I'm like, look, I can't do that.
I can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, or there's something else I'd rather do than that. Someone asked me to help them on a board I was on, which I love, but I already committed to something else. And I said, I'm really sorry, but I can't do that.
Yes. Yeah. I choose me.
I choose me.
I choose me. I have to choose me more often. Yeah. Right. And having raised a couple of children and, you know, really dedicating a lot of my life when they were in high school and all of that to sports and things like that. And I was never the cookie baking mom, but I was there, right?
Yeah.
This notion of taking time for me and saying no, even to things like, no, I don't want to go away for the weekend. I need to rest, and I won't rest if we're in the car for 6 hours and we're on the go the whole weekend. I come home depleted, even though it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know.
Right? That whole like, damn it, I need to recharge, and I'm really mad that I need to recharge.
I know. I feel the same way. And it's not like when I was in my 20s and, you know, you could go party all weekend and
exactly.
you just like have this endless energy and you mm-hmm. could just kind of make it work. Now I'm like, look, I do need that time and I don't feel like I have to be out doing all these things. I mean, there's still lots of things I love to do, but sometimes I just say, no, that's not the time. And, you right. know, prioritizing ourselves, I think, is also key to reinventing ourselves.
Well, most definitely. Right. And one thing I know about myself for sure is that social isolation is kryptonite for me. It absolutely kills me to not be in community.
Yeah.
And so COVID was interesting for me because I sought community through this little screen that we're talking on and felt connected to others, but the physical presence thing was really missing. So now that like the gate is like a quarter of the way down and we're free to go outside, I'm going outside.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't mean hiking in the woods because I did that. And I do that. I mean, just being in community with other people, which still feels a bit risky, but God, my heart is so much fuller now. Right.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's like we've missed that. And it's so key to, for me, thriving. Mm-hmm. You know, I may do, of course, because what else could you do right. during the pandemic? And, you know, right. we can do that. We do whatever we need to do. But I hear you. I hear you. Ellen, as we wrap up, are there any last words of wisdom you want to share with the audience about the possibility that exists for reinvention for midlife and older women?
Mm. Well, I think that we take our cues from the world of improvisation. Follow your feet, which in improv just means take the next little step. Trust yourself enough to step out, get off of the back line, which is where you see the improvisers are standing off to the side, waiting to insert themselves into the conversation. Follow your feet and get off the back line. Just start something. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be for anyone but yourself. And it has to be of your choosing for you. You know, I think that if we can do more of that and be in community with each other and support each other while we're doing that, then we all have more joy and happiness and connection, which for me, that's food, right? That nourishes me. That makes me happy. It brings me joy. And I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you about this because this isn't really something I elaborate on very often, but it's clearly right there for me.
It really is.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you. I love this idea of just that first step. As tiny as it might be, maybe mm-hmm. it's just a phone call.
Yeah.
Or Googling something that you just keep having a recurring thought about that just doesn't go away, that maybe is a sign. I should investigate this.
Yeah. Yeah. There are online improv classes. If people don't want to leave home, you can do improvisation online. It's super fun. So, Super fun.
It's so cool. Like, what is possible these days? Like, mm-hmm. Almost anything. I love it. I know the audience is saying, well, where can I find out more about Ellen? She's so cool. How can people reach you? How can they find you?
Well, our website is theBoulderCompany.com, and it's Boulder like B Boulder, not Boulder, Colorado. So theBoulderCompany.com is a place to find me. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Instagram, and you can find me
everywhere.
Yeah, I'm Ellen at theBoulderCompany.com.
I love it. And we'll put all this in the show notes. So
thank you.
As you're listening to this, you're like, I'm driving. I'm listening to this great podcast. And I'm driving and I can't stop right now. Not to worry. All of the links for Ellen to reach Ellen are in the show notes. Ellen, I cannot thank you enough for gracing me with your presence, for sharing your wisdom, for telling your story. Speaking of storytelling, telling your story of evolving and unfolding and stepping into your fierce 61-year young self so that you are shining your light for so many other people and have become a thought leader. I love
that.
I love your reinvention. I love what you've done. And you're such a great testament to anything is possible.
Anything at all.
Anything, right? So thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, I have to ask, did you love this episode as much as I did? Isn't Ellen so cool? And don't you love the idea of more fun? Right? I think we could all use more of that these days, and it's such fuel to help us think about our own reinvented life. If you loved this episode, I am going to ask you a very small favor. Would you please take a couple of minutes and forward this episode to two of your friends, colleagues, family members, anyone who could benefit from listening to our conversation, soak up some wisdom, and perhaps think a little differently about their own life? So many possibilities in what Ellen shared. And by the way, I have to tell you, I am so excited about the upcoming episode. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to introduce you to the amazingness of Franzi Jean-Louis, who was an opera singer, moved to France, and then reinvented herself as a mental fitness coach. What is that, you ask? Well, of course, you got to tune in and find out. I can promise you that this episode is full of inspiration to get you thinking about your own life. Until then, keep shining your light in the world. The world needs you. And I'll see you on the other side for the next episode. Are you tired of waiting for someday? Feel like you're too old or it's too late to reinvent yourself? Unsure of how you'd even get started on the path to midlife reinvention? I'm here to help. As your guide on the side and host of the top 2% globally rated Reinvention Rebels podcast, I've been around the reinvention block a lot. Here's a simple way you can get started. Sign up for my free audio, 5 questions to spark your curiosity and inspire your Reinvention Rebel journey. It all starts with getting curious about what's possible. And I've got 5 questions to help tease out some very cool ideas. Let's get started. Details are in the show notes.